Thereafter, one day while Sobari Muni, who was expert in chanting mantras, was sitting in a secluded place, he thought to himself about the cause of his fall down, which was simply that he had associated himself with the sexual affairs of the fish. Purport. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks that Sobari Muni had fallen from his austerity because of a Vaishnava aparad. The history is that when Garuda went to eat fish, Sobari Muni unnecessarily gave the fish shelter under his care. Because Garuda's plans for eating were disappointed, Sobari Muni certainly committed a great offense to a Vaishnava. Because of this Vaishnava aparad, an offense at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, Sobari Muni fell from his exalted position of mystic tapasya. Sobari Muni fell from, one should not, therefore, impede the activities of a Vaishnava. This is a lesson we must learn from this incident concerning Sobari Muni. Om Gyana Timanandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Mitamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, in classes leading up to today's verse, this history of the offense to Garuda by Sobari Muni has been discussed by devotees. And so, I wanted to do something a little different in class this morning. That is that I would ask the devotees for their permission for me to make a presentation here, but to forego any questions and comments at the end. Many times when we're listening to the class or any presentation in Krishna consciousness and a question comes into our mind, at that point we really stop listening and we just think about our question and how we want to ask it. And so we may be missing valuable instruction that comes subsequent to that question appearing in our mind. So because this subject matter of Vaishnava aparad, and I'm going to be reading some instruction from our previous acharyas on Vaishnava aparad, because that is so important to hear and to understand, I think if we just take this one class period to simply try to hear the instruction and not comment on it or question it, that we can all benefit. So with your permission, I'll proceed along those lines. And I guess I won't take any questions or comments about that either. I'll just do it. So the first, I want to read a verse from the Padma Purana. These are all very familiar instructions to us, but I think they're good to hear nonetheless. This verse from Padma Purana, generally speaking, the first line of the verse is well known, especially for those of us who don't have so many verses committed to memory. Maybe those of us that do can quote the rest of the verse, but I'll just quote the first line. Arche Vishnu Sila Dir Gurushu Naramatir Vaishnave Jati Buhi. So the translation is, that person who considers the deity of the Supreme Lord to be dead matter made out of stone, wood or metal, or the spiritual master who as an eternal associate of the Supreme Lord to be an ordinary man who is prone to die, or the Vaishnava to be coming from some caste, or water which washes the feet of the pure devotee or the Supreme Personality of Godhead to be ordinary water, although such water has the potency to destroy all evils of the age of Kali, or to consider the holy name of the Supreme Lord or mantras dedicated to him which are able to destroy all sins to be ordinary sounds, or to consider the Supreme Lord of all, Lord Vishnu, to be equal with other demigods, is considered to possess a hellish mentality. A person who thinks in this way is certainly a resident of hell. In this verse, the Vaishnava Jati Buddhi, we don't have this conception so much in the West, although we have our other forms of discrimination and therefore prejudice. But this particular word that's mentioned here, jati, caste, that's not so much present in the Western culture, caste, but in India it's a very big deal, what caste you're born in. And it really limits your social mobility in ways, and again, which are foreign to most of the Western democratic countries. But it's such a destructive conception or social norm when we think in terms of this jat or caste. And so to consider a Vaishnava, to designate a Vaishnava as being a member of a particular caste is, as described in this verse, the product of a hellish mentality. Nothing good can come from it. It's such a wrong conception of who a Vaishnava is, or what being a Vaishnava means. Actually, as we go through all of these descriptions today, we'll see that Vaishnava aparad has a lot to do with this type of a material conception or material view of a Vaishnava. Whether it be, as in this case, the jat or the caste that he may be born in, or whether it may be, as Prabhupada often remarked, considering a Vaishnava to be an American Vaishnava, European Vaishnava, Indian Vaishnava, like that. These are all designations which are just the opposite of what being a Vaishnava actually means. And so Vaishnava aparad takes its root in these types of material conceptions of the devotees of the Lord. Now, there's a issue of this magazine, Sri Krishna Kathamrita, that's dedicated to Vaishnava aparad, so I'm going to be reading from that. And if you know this magazine, you know that the editors, Madhavananda in particular, do a good job of researching the works of the previous acharyas in presenting Vaishnava culture and the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And so in this issue that's dedicated to Vaishnava aparad, there's an article that is taken from a work of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Sri Bhaktivinoda Vani by Baba, which is a collection of different instructions by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur on different subject matters. And so in chapter 75 of that compilation, Sri Bhaktivinoda Vani by Baba, the chapter deals with Vaishnava aparad. And there's some very interesting questions and answers that can give us instruction on this subject matter of Vaishnava aparad. So perhaps the first question that would come to mind is, why is Vaishnava ninda or Vaishnava aparad considered to be the most heinous offense? And so Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur answers this in the Jiva Dharma. And so taken from the Jiva Dharma, there's an answer to this question. It is brihad aparad, the gravest offense, to criticize any saintly person who, giving up all karma, dharma, jnana, and yoga, has taken exclusive shelter of the holy name. The holy name, which is non-different from the Lord, does not forgive the criticism of the great souls who are spreading the glories of the holy name throughout the world. The holy name quickly bestows its causeless mercy upon those who, giving up criticism of Namparayana sadhus, saints who have taken shelter of the holy name, the holy name quickly bestows its causeless mercy upon those who, giving up criticism of saints who have taken shelter of the holy name, instead accept the exalted position of sadhus and chant the holy name in their association. So there's a connection between the pure chanting of the holy name and Vaishnavas. And when we criticize Vaishnavas, when we offend Vaishnavas, then it affects our ability to chant the holy name. So that's why such a Vaishnava aparadha is considered the most heinous offense. So the next question is, what are the six kinds of Vaishnava aparadha and what are their consequences? So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Sajjana Toshini wrote an article entitled The Vaishnava Ninda, and this answer is from that article. What are the six kinds of Vaishnava aparadha and what are their consequences? The foolish person who commits Vaishnava Ninda descends to the hell named Maharaurava along with his four fathers. Killing a Vaishnava, that's one. Criticizing a Vaishnava, being envious of a Vaishnava, not offering a happy welcome when a Vaishnava comes, showing anger at a Vaishnava, and becoming unhappy upon seeing a Vaishnava, all of these heinous actions lead to one's fall. So again, we can imagine that these kinds of offenses, again, come from a material conception of a Vaishnava, considering his material circumstance as more important than his pure chanting of the holy name of the Lord. So the question comes then, what are the envious criticisms that wicked people make of Vaishnavas? So there's six kinds of Vaishnava aparadha, and so we don't often find people killing Vaishnavas, but perhaps criticizing Vaishnavas is there. And so what are the types of criticisms that people that criticize Vaishnavas focus on? So this answer comes again from the Sajjana Toshini, same article on Vaishnava Ninda. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, there are three varieties of envious criticism that wicked people make of Vaishnavas. First of all, although pure bhakti has arisen in the devotee, still wicked people criticize whatever faults were in the devotee previously, prior to the waking of pure devotion. When bhakti arises in the heart, all impurities are quickly dissolved. We'll go back to this topic later in another reading where that famous verse is Vaishnavera kre mudra vige na bujaya, that one should not consider the past of a Vaishnava. But again, the past of a Vaishnava means what we perceive, and that is the material body and the material circumstances. And so that is a subject matter for criticism of the Vaishnava. For wicked people, not for ordinary people, we shouldn't do it. So secondly, although the impurities in a Vaishnava are gradually diminishing, during the time when some traces still remain, wicked people criticize the leftover impurities. There is a third thing that wicked people somehow find to talk about in a pure Vaishnava. A pure Vaishnava has no desire to perform any sinful activities. However, sometimes, by chance, some improper activity may come about. Although that fault won't remain for long, still such wicked persons will talk about it and thereby commit Bishana Vaishnava Ninda, terrible blasphemy against that Vaishnava, and thus fall down. So all those are things that are in the category, again, of material circumstances of a Vaishnava. So the next topic here is, what are the faults of a Vaishnava which, when discussed, constitute Vaishnava aparad? Okay, so yeah, this is a danger of Vaishnava aparad criticism, but what do you mean? What are the details? I mean, is it is everything that one speaks about a Vaishnava falling in this category of Vaishnava aparad? So this question is asked, what are the faults of a Vaishnava which, when discussed, constitute Vaishnava aparad? So again, from the same article in Sajjana Toshini, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, to discuss the faults that may arise by chance in a Vaishnava is an offense. The main thing is that the discussion or even consideration of these faults in a Vaishnava is an offense to the holy name, etc. Casting false flame on a Vaishnava and finding fault with a Vaishnava for any of the following three reasons are offenses against the holy name. Number one, impurities that come from the Vaishnava's past. Two, impurities that are perishing. Three, impure activities that take place accidentally. Criticizing a Vaishnava for these reasons prevents nam spruti, the appearance of the holy name in one's heart, and keeps one from becoming a Vaishnava. So again, this link between Vaishnava aparad and the ability to chant the holy name purely is there. So these are some instructions from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. In the life of our previous acharyas, there are also examples of Vaishnava aparad and how, when it happens, when some offense is committed, and we all are subject to committing some offense, although we should avoid this, obviously, we're all subject to the possibility of committing such offense. So what does one do when an offense like this has been committed? And there's an example from the life of Srila Rupa Goswami that's described by Srila Narahari Thakur, Narahari Chakravarti, in the Sri Bhakti Ratna Kara. He describes there how at one time Srila Rupa Goswami was in meditation, samadhi, and he was viewing the pastimes of Sri Krishna and Srimati Radharani. It was actually quite an amusing pastime where Srimati Radharani was having her hair combed, and somehow or another Krishna snuck up behind and he started becoming the hairdresser. And Radharani was unaware of this. But then one of the gopis gave her a mirror, and then she saw that it was Krishna dressing her hair. And she became very embarrassed by this, and all the gopis enjoyed the laughter at this scene. And Srila Rupa Goswami, in his meditation, also was enjoying that laughter. But just at that time, a Vaishnava came to visit Srila Rupa Goswami and his bhajan kutir. And his arrival and Rupa Goswami's laughter happened at the same time. And therefore, that Vaishnava, he felt that, oh, because you see, that Vaishnava had some physical defect. He was lame, and so he walked with a limp. He walked funny. And so he thought that the laughter, that he thought Rupa Goswami was laughing at his physical impairment. He became very sorry at this, and not saying anything to Rupa Goswami, he left there. And he went straight to Srila Sanatana Goswami, and he explained what had happened. Saying that he felt that he was offended by Rupa Goswami. So just after he left, Rupa Goswami's samadhi broke. He could no longer meditate on this pastime, and he thought to himself, just as Sobhari Muni here is reflecting, what happened to me? Rupa Goswami, he also was thinking to himself, what happened? Why am I taken out of the lila of the Lord? And he realized, oh, I must have committed some offense to a devotee. And so he also got up and went to see Srila Sanatana Goswami. So that's where I'll pick up reading here. What I want to read is how they dealt with this feeling of having offended a Vaishnava. Meanwhile, when the Vaishnava had felt offended, Srila Rupa Goswami suddenly lost his vision of the Lord's pastimes. He became very disturbed and looked everywhere. Considering the situation carefully, he concluded that someone must have come to see him while he was absorbed in seeing Krishna's pastimes. I did not honor the person that came, and thereby I committed an offense. If you remember, one of the types of offenses is not offering a welcome, a happy welcome to a Vaishnava. So Srila Rupa Goswami felt like this. Thinking in this way, Rupa also went to Sanatana Goswami's place. When he saw Prabhupada, Srila Rupa Goswami coming, that Vaishnava approached him. Falling on the ground, he offered his respects. With great humility, he told Rupa, O great soul, I have committed an offense to you. Please forgive me. Previously, when I went to see you, I did not understand that you were wrapped in meditation. Standing before Srila Rupa Goswami, the Vaishnava prayed, Please be kind and forgive me for my offense. If you are merciful to me, only then can my heart become peaceful. When he heard these words, Srila Rupa Goswami became very agitated at heart. Falling to the ground, he offered his respectful obeisances to the Vaishnava. Folding his hands, he said, I have no power to say how great was the offense that I committed to you. Please kindly forgive me. Both devotees were very humble, and both were filled with bhakti ras. Forgiving each other, they became peaceful. The two of them then went to Srila Sanatana Goswami. For a long time, they all plunged into relishing nectarine topics of Lord Krishna. When everyone heard about this incident, they became filled with wonder. So what do Vaishnavas do if offense is committed? Even Srila Rupa Goswami, the head, we're Rupanugas, we're followers of Rupa Goswami. He was falling at the feet of this Vaishnava begging offense, begging to be excused, forgiven for offense. And so this is how Vaishnavas deal with Vaishnava aparad when it comes, not just that it's let to hang, but something must be done about it. Now, there's an interesting instruction that comes from a pastime that we read here some time ago in our study of Srimad Bhagavatam about the Daksha Yajna. And of course, we know in the Daksha Yajna that Daksha committed an offense against Lord Shiva. But there's some curious question that the Acharyas have raised about this, because Daksha did ask forgiveness from Shiva for committing the offense. But we know that Daksha took another birth, and then in that other next birth, he offended Narada Muni. And so, if he was forgiven from the offense, because you see, one of the effects of committing an offense is that more offenses are generated from that. But if you seek the shelter of the Vaishnava and receive forgiveness, then that shouldn't happen. You know, the tendency to commit offense again shouldn't happen. There should be some change. But that didn't happen in the case of Daksha. And so the question is, why didn't it happen? He asked for forgiveness. And so with that background, I'll pick up reading this section. If Daksha had received the favor of Lord Shiva, then there should have been no reaction whatsoever. But Bhagavatam 4.7.16 describes that he only achieved the forgiveness of Lord Shiva, Shama, and not his favor, Anugraha. Because he retained the concept of being the father-in-law of Lord Shiva, he could not see Lord Shiva in a superior position as an advanced Vaishnava and achieve his favor by bowing down to touch his feet. One mundane example may serve to illustrate this important distinction. Suppose you lend some money to someone, and then later they come to you, apologize and say that they are unable to repay you. You may say, okay, you are relieved of the debt. But are you satisfied by such behavior? No, satisfaction can come only through being repaid the debt originally promised. Similarly, begging for and acquiring forgiveness for an offense is not the same as achieving the blessings and favor of the offended Vaishnava. One should actually achieve the favor of the offended Vaishnava, then one will be protected from Krishna's displeasure. And so two steps are there in this process of forgiveness, to achieve the forgiveness of the person, but also to achieve their favor by actually satisfying them. And finally, I want to read from a question and answer session that took place after a lecture given by Srila Gaura Govinda Maharaj on the question, on the subject matter of Vaishnava Aparad, because it gives some very interesting insight into what he calls the Vaishnava way. So the question is asked, even if one becomes situated in Goloka Vrindavan, can we fall down if we commit offense? Srila Gaura Govinda Swami. Yes, if you commit such aparad, it is so dangerous. So, devotee, so that is why we are here in the material world? Gaura Govinda Swami. Yes, therefore you are here. So many causes are there. You have committed aparad and also sinful activities. It is not only aparad. In the spiritual world, there is no question of committing offense. However, if one has gotten Krishna prema, if one who has gotten Krishna prema commits Vaishnava aparad, then he can fall from that elevated position. One should be very, very careful. Therefore, we should consider all to be Vaishnavas but me. I am not a Vaishnava. This is Mahaprabhu's teaching. One should think that all are superior to me. All are greater than me. I am the lowest of the low. We should think everyone is a Vaishnava except me. I am not a Vaishnava. One who has developed Krishna prema thinks like this. Such a devotee says, I have no touch of prema at all. I am such a rascal, such a stupid fellow. I am fallen and degraded. I am not at all. I have not developed prema at all. I have no touch of prema at all. So then he goes on and he says, continuing this, that Narottam Das Thakur has written a very nice song. We should think, how can I get the opportunity to serve Krishna? I have not developed attachment and love and affection for the lotus feet of Sri Guru and the Vaishnavas. I am such a rascal. I have so much hatred in my heart and mind, so how can I get it? O Master, purifier of the sinful, O Savior of the fallen souls, please rescue this Narottam Das. He's quoting from Narottam Das Thakur's song. Offer prayers to the lotus feet of such a Vaishnava, Srila Gaura Govinda Maharaj says. If I have offended you, but you are a dosha darshi, you never see any dosha fault with anyone. Please excuse me. I am patita. I am most degraded. Please shower your mercy and deliver me. Then he concludes with the statement, this is the Vaishnava way. And so this is how Vaishnavas think and act. And that protects one from this mad elephant offense of Vaishnava aparad. So we'll end there. All glory is to Srila Prabhupada.